Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mealer here. Glad to have you with us today as we chat with Mark Dwyer. Mark, horticulturist and landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. It's an internationally themed botanic garden. Really glad to have him back to visit with us today. And if you have some questions about those outdoor plants in particular, the flowers, the trees, and the shrubs, we welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll be glad to get you online. And Mark Dwyer, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
It's a pleasure, Larry.
Let's talk first about those tulips for just a minute. You've got lots of tulips at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, and I expect that these cold temperatures have created some issues.
Definitely. You know, we had that very hot spell that was intense a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And a lot of things, we found our spring blooms in general were 3 weeks ahead. So we saw a lot of growth on tulips, which are typically, you know, your earliest tulips you're lucky to see by mid-April, maybe the end of April.
Yeah.
So we actually had some blooming. And now with these very cold nights, we've seen a lot of damage on those leaves. So in terms of perking up day after day, they're struggling.
And when we've got flowers in bloom there at the Rotary Gardens, talk about your various collections that you have there.
Sure. Well, the gardens themselves, situated on 20 acres, our collections, roughly, we have about 1,000 varieties of trees and shrubs, about 3,000 varieties of perennials, and we're just starting to see the beginning of about 400,000 spring blooming bulbs. And you alluded to tulips, and we probably have 30 or 40,000 tulips. And then we do a lot of seasonal plants, as many visitors would remember.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I'm just going to invite people to take a look at your website. I called it up myself. Just go to rotarygardens.org, and you're going to find a lot of information about the gardens themselves. And you have quite a few events. I know you've got something coming up. Well, I guess not for another month or so. Sometime in May, you've got a plant sale and a lot of other events.
We do. Actually, we're getting into full swing with our events. And obviously, as a nonprofit, those events are meant as fundraisers.
Sure.
And our plant sales, for instance, May 19th, we have an heirloom vegetable sale where we're going to feature 50 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. And this is selling the plants, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We also have 50 varieties of heirloom sweet peppers with a focus on Italian varieties.
Cool.
Lots of eggplant varieties. And lots of basil. We actually will be selling about 65 varieties of basil, which I didn't know there were that many varieties, but we'll have them.
Well, my wife's a big basil fan, so we have to get down. It's May 19th, eh?
Correct.
I have to remember that. Okay. Well, I tell you what, John in Waupun has a question. Lots of people have questions for you, so let's take some. And John in Waupun is first, so John, we'll go to you. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thanks. A couple questions. One, I have a Creeping Charlie, and I was heard on your show last year or one like it, that a borax solution would take care of that. My question is, if I do that this spring and I want to seed, is there a problem?
Well, good question. You know, the borax solution, we've not tried it in the gardens, and I've heard mixed results with it because obviously with laying that down, there is the concern about overseeding later on. So having not tried it, it's tough to say when you'd be able to reseed. And my question is it truly effective in the long haul? Because if you don't get every little segment of that Creeping Charlie, it'll be back in force.
Yeah, I guess one of the issues or one of the biggest issues with it, and it can be effective in killing, you know, a spot or a whole amount, the boron toxicity can be a problem if it's not. You certainly wouldn't be applying it more than once, and I'm told that the boron toxicity could be a problem. We did have one person who called and said that this is a few years back now, but she had tried it on her lawn, and she thought if a little is good, a little bit more is better, and she killed every blade of grass, everything in her lawn. So it's probably, you know, you can go online and find out the proper mixtures and all that, but I've noticed that there are also plenty of warnings, and I'd be a little leery, especially if you're trying to seed in a new lawn.
Yeah, and if I could interject, what we do at the gardens is we wait until temperatures are a little over 60, and we'll do a very weak Roundup solution with the intent of killing the creeping Charlie, obviously, but it kills everything in that area. And 2 weeks later, we'll add some fresh topsoil. We'll rake that in or do a light rototilling and let that sit for another 2 weeks and see if we have any regrowth of that creeping Charlie. And so we've had a month duration since it's been killed off. And then we're comfortable seeding again. Mm-hmm. So the sooner you do it, you'd want to get your seed down before, you know, midsummer, obviously. We've had quite a bit of success with that.
All right. Thanks for calling, John. Good luck. Jim in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hey.
What's on your mind?
We just bought a nice piece of property last autumn, and there's a big, open, sunny area in the backyard that we thought would be great for gardening, and then discovered with the spring thaw that all the snow runoff passes right through there, and for about 3 or 4 or 5 days, it's under a few inches of water. Is there anything I should avoid putting there? Any long-term planting that just won't work if that happens every year.
Sounds like a candidate for a rain garden.
Well, you know, those areas, the observation is the most important thing. As a new property, what I would recommend is, number one, don't be daunted by that, because that's not unusual this time of year in terms of areas where there's a lot of drainage and water issues. The true test is later in the summer. You want to see what sort of drainage you have in the summertime. Perhaps dig a hole about a foot deep and pour water in it, fill it up, and see how long it takes for that soil to drain off. If it drains off in less than an hour, you have pretty well-drained soil, and that'll solve a lot of your problems. The question is also soil structure. So again, the standing water is not quite as much of an issue as what type of soil in the drainage.
Hmm.
Thanks. That's
a great tip. That's one I hadn't heard on the show before. But you dig the hole about a foot deep and then throw the water in. And if it's done in an hour or gone,
yep,
it means it's fairly well drained then.
Right. If it's sitting there for longer, there's more issues in clay. There might be some clay.
Yeah.
But examine it for sure.
Okay. And on to Elaine in Dodgeville. Elaine, hi to you.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got some butterfly bushes. I just planted them, and I didn't prune them last fall after the frost, and I was wondering if that's when it's supposed to be done, or if I do, and it maybe don't seem to be doing anything right now, but how do I prune them? How much, and do you, or down to the ground, or what? I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, butterfly bushes are what are called a sub-shrub in our climate, meaning some years they'll die back to the ground, which isn't unusual in Wisconsin. Other years you might have budding up the stem, and it's very rare that they would bud up the entire height of that plant. What we do with our butterfly bushes at the gardens is we're going to wait another couple weeks because they're very late in leafing out, and what we'll see is once you see buds start to swell and emerge, meaning, you know, you'll see new leaves coming out, just clip down the stem just above those live buds. If you're not seeing anything, then the plant has died to the ground, and you can cut it, you know, 6 inches or so, and it should come back. Now, my warning with things like butterfly bushes or Caryopteris, which is also another sub-shrub, is that there are winter losses, meaning on occasion, and I'll, for us, it's about 50% of our butterfly bushes don't make it year after year.
Oh.
So just observe it, and again, prune. You want to get as much of that plant coming back as possible, so it's still a little early to determine how much of that plant might still be alive above ground level.
Okay.
All right.
That's what I was thinking. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And we have some open lines. Again, you can get on with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Mary in Whitewater next. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I have a lot of early bloomers that took a hit with the freezing. And three of them in particular, I'd like to know if I can just cut them off. My Virginia waterleaf in the shade garden is just frozen, and it had started up very beautifully. I have a white bleeding heart that grew to 6 inches, and it's frozen solid.
Huh.
And all my Lenten rose are just, they were 12 inches tall and blooming beautifully, and they're all just practically dead. And I thought Lenten rose would survive this since they can come up in the snow. Can I cut them all off right now and just let them all resprout?
Well, I guess the short answer is yes, you can, but I guess I would caution doing it too soon, because something like bleeding hearts, granted they emerged very early this year, there is some frost tolerance, and our bleeding hearts at the gardens look very similar.
Okay.
And the fact is, cutting them back right now would be more of a cosmetic thing. I would recommend waiting a couple more weeks and see if any of that growth will make it through, because if it won't, that plant will regenerate regardless.
Okay.
All of those plants should be fine. And if there is a lot of significant damage, it takes some. It is stressful for the plant to regenerate, but you'll observe that happening in the next couple of weeks when we get another warm-up.
Okay, because I thought that bleeding heart would just go to mush the minute it thaws.
And it very well may. Mm-hmm. But again, I would say don't cut it down too soon and just observe it. But right. It will be obvious if it starts turning black and, as you say, mushy. Go ahead and cut it down, and bleeding heart will be right back up.
I also planted fall pansies, and they came up right through the snow beautifully, and they've all just died over. They're just looking awful.
Well, now, the pansies are really a short-lived, very frost-tolerant perennial, and if the leaves turn purple, that's normal. I won't guarantee it, but I think the pansies will be back.
Okay. And then 2 weeks ago, I also did all my dormant oil spraying on my fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
Before they, you know, were budded out. And I was wondering, with all the rain that we've had, if I might need to do that again.
It wouldn't hurt, although I would say, you know, contact your local extension agent and ask that same question.
Okay.
But certainly the timing with everything has been screwed up with this spring, so I would look into it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Marie. I'm wondering, Mark, now let's say we have some plants that suffer, but they kind of come back and look like they're going to make it. Do we need to apply any additional fertilizer or any tender, loving care to those plants?
Not really, because, you know, these plants, if there's a lot of damage, the regeneration won't be affected by fertilizer. Right now it's tissue damage, and our concern with the tulips is we know that those leaves are affected and maybe irreversibly. But a lot of the flower buds are still underneath the soil or protected by that sheath of leaves. So we still think blooms will be okay, but the bulbs will suffer and have a bit of a setback this spring, no doubt.
Okay. Michael in Port Wing, it's your turn. Hi.
Good morning. My question takes us back to basil. And you had so many varieties. And what I would be interested in is varieties that would work well indoors year-round, or at least indoors in the winter and outside in the summer.
Well, all of these basils, they're actually, with just a small exception, they're all Oxymum basilicum, just the straight-up basil. And in many of your home kitchen kits and your windowsill herb gardens, basil's included. So these can be utilized inside. The trick with the basils, however, is providing adequate light in the winter, because otherwise they get so leggy.
Okay.
And, you know, with our basils, we'll have them out in the gardens in a collection, and as you know, if you've used basil, you keep cutting it back.
Backing it off, yeah.
Never let it bloom.
That's right. Keep eating it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Keep eating it. And, you know, indoors, the other concern would be the soil should be somewhat moist but very well drained, because in the winter months with less light, you certainly don't want to overwater those, or they'll just rot. They'll just disappear on you. But I would say with adequate taking care of these plants, they would be fine in the home as well.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks much.
Yeah, thanks much for calling. Let's go to Waukesha. Talk to Chuck next. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Very
morning.
Good program.
Thank you.
I planted about six golden spirea bushes in the front of the house, and early this spring I saw all this dead stuff sticking out, so I cut it down to about 1 inch above the ground. But I left one bush because it seemed like it was starting to bud, and I just discovered that's how they grow. They grow new shoots out of these branches that come out of the plant. So I was wondering if I killed the other bushes by cutting them way down.
Okay.
Well, if they're established, if they've been there for a while, you are totally fine, because I'll tell you, we go through rotary gardens every late fall, and we probably have 100, 120 spirea. And with the exception of bridal wreath spireas, which are a different type, we cut all of them to the ground.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh. And they'll sprout right back. The one you left up, you might want to consider cutting even now, even with a couple of small leaves on it, because it will then be the same size as the others. But you can abuse these to no end. They will come back, and we actually will... We've cut spireas in midsummer to get new growth, and the gold ones in particular, to get bright new growth and something we can keep a little shorter.
Oh, okay.
You did the right thing.
They're pretty hardy then. Huh?
Yep,
absolutely.
Oh, and as far as the lady with the bleeding heart bush, I have one I cut down to 1 inch above the ground, and it comes back so readily. It's just so hardy, you know.
Amazing plants.
Don't worry about that one.
Okay. Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mark Dwyer, horticulturist and landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens of Janesville, an internationally themed botanic garden. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting with Mark Dwyer of the Rotary Gardens of Janesville, Larry Mueller here. Thank you for listening in. If you have a question for Mark, we're dealing with pretty much with the outdoor flowers and the bushes and the trees. Feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And Mark, I see you've got a bagged mushroom compost sale every Saturday in the month of April.
Correct. Actually, that'll go every Saturday, April and May.
Okay.
And this is a product that we've used extensively at the gardens to improve and enrich the soil. And the material itself is the byproduct of a mushroom farm. It's aged horse manure, peat moss, sawdust. And this product has been ground up, and we sell it in bags as a fundraiser. We buy it by the semi-load. We use about 400 cubic yards a year at the gardens.
Wow.
And it's made the difference as a amendment. We'll till it into our annual beds, and we even use it as a top dressing mulch in our perennial beds. And it's been absolutely wonderful, and many times it's hard to find it in bulk for the general public, but we sell it in 40-pound bags, and that sale runs again every Saturday from 8 to 4.
So $5.50 a bag, that's a pretty good deal too.
I think so, and you know, in terms of organic amendments, they can't be overstated. Whether it's your own compost or peat moss or this product, do it. Now's the time.
All right. And Saturday's the day. It's from 8 to 4 every Saturday.
Yes.
Mary Ann in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Mary Ann.
Good morning. I have a question on Weglia bushes. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. They're beautiful green bushes that get these pretty pink flowers all over them in the spring. And I bought them and planted 6 of them, and they bloomed beautifully for about 4 years. And then they got too large, and I pruned them. And it doesn't seem to matter whether I prune them in the fall or if I prune them in the summer after they're done blooming, they no longer bloom. What am I doing wrong?
Well, the wigelias, as you mentioned, the beautiful trumpet flowers, and the shape of those is sometimes awkward. They don't lend themselves to being, you know, sheared, obviously. And in terms of your pruning, has it been over 2 years since you pruned those?
Well, I pruned them 2 years in a row, 1 year right after they were done blooming, and then the following year, like in fall.
Mm-hmm.
Or I even tried early spring, and they're just not blooming now at all.
Yeah, the trick...
A couple little blooms, and that's it.
Sure. Well, if you haven't changed anything else in terms of the care of those plants, this might be your year. You know, those plants bloom in very late spring, early summer, so the comment on that bloom time is any sort of pruning in spring... You may have taken the flower buds off.
Okay.
And on occasion, those will bloom on new wood, meaning if you were to prune them in the winter, you'd get a flush of growth in spring, and they still may bloom. But there still may be a recovery in terms of the timing for the bloom. So if they don't bloom this year, I think I'd be more concerned with some sort of soil issue. You know, if everything else is vigorous about that plant, there's no other explanation except that pruning regimen.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the plant grows. I mean, the bush continues to grow and get bigger and wider, but no flowers.
Right.
Are you fertilizing it a lot?
No, I haven't been. What should I fertilize it with?
Well, sometimes people give it too much good care, Mark. Is that correct, some of those plants?
Right. A lot of times people with fertilization on woody plants, it's overdone where the plant generates a lot of foliar growth and no flowers. So I would keep an eye on it and you know, I hope this is your year for it, and if not, do a little more research. But
pruning it in the fall is the best time?
Absolutely, or late winter, all the way up through early March. But again, late spring or when active growth begins on any of the plants, that may affect your blooms on that particular shrub.
Okay, great.
All right. Thanks, Mary Ann. Yeah, appreciate the call. Leslie in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering about jasmine as a plant. Is that a plant that we could grow outdoors in our zone?
Jasmine? No, it's not hardy to our climate.
Okay.
We have jasmine at the gardens that we've brought out into our herb garden during the summer. So we keep it containerized, and what we'll do is we sink that container in the ground and train it up a little trellis, and then before early October, when it starts getting cooler in the evenings, we'll cut it back, take it off that trellis, and bring it in as a house plant. But no, it wouldn't be winter hardy for us.
How early would you want it? Would you take it outside?
I wouldn't take it out till June. There's always this rush to get out there in May, but we still have the danger of not only frost, but very cool evenings, and jasmine should really never be below 50 degrees.
Well, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And Bill is next, I believe. Bill, who's, I believe, on the road. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes. My mother lives in Michigan, and I've been trying to get rid of her ground moles for years. Do you have any ideas that might work?
For getting rid of
moles.
Moles?
Now, are you sure are they moles? Are they tunnels that you're seeing along in the lawn? Or?
Yes, the lawn, you have to be careful where you step. You might sink down 6 or 8 inches.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, at the gardens, we're on city land, so in terms of any sort of rodent or animal control, we're not well-versed in that. There is a plant called many of the euphorbias, which are many are very hardy in terms of perennials. There's a couple that are called gopher spurge in terms of their common name. And whether or not they'll deter that sort of population, I'm not sure. But short of any sort of, chemical or manual animal control, I really don't have an idea.
There are some miserable-looking traps that you can apply. And frankly, in a lawn, one mole can, you'd swear there were 20 moles out there, and sometimes it's just one or two. There are traps that you can purchase that will more or less spear them. You need to follow the directions. But if you go to a garden center, you'll find those traps. Or there are also companies and organizations that will help you out with that. Companies that, and I'm trying to think of a critter control would be an example, I guess, of a company that might be able to help you out with that. And once you get, sometimes it's just a couple of them that are creating all the problems. And when you get rid of those two or so, you're done. Good luck, Bill. Thanks for calling. Doug in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. I've got some bulbs that have some growth a few inches up, and I'm wondering if those need to be protected or if they're going to be okay with this cold snap we've got going.
Well, if the bulbs themselves, if the growth right now is just a point or a sheath, you should be fine.
With a few inches.
Yeah, you should be okay. You know, we're seeing hostas that have poked up and even some lilies that are coming out of the ground. And even if there's some external damage on that tissue, they'll spiral new growth right out of that center point. You know, we've been asked recently, should we be putting blankets or row covers or some sort of protection on these plants? And the temperatures have gotten so low that's not effective. It's a little easier if it's around 25 or just below freezing. But the fact is, these plants have adapted and gone through this sort of thing in the past. So I wouldn't have a lot of concern unless something is really fully foliated or is in flower.
Yeah, I've got probably, 15 or 20 lilies that are all up about 3-4 inches, but it's so windy you couldn't cover them anyway. I mean, it'd be so difficult to cover them, and you're absolutely right. If it's 19 degrees outside,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be able to do much. Thanks, Doug, for calling. Appreciate it. Teresa in Heartland, your turn. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. I have a couple questions about transplanting, and also you had mentioned about the clay and flooding of areas. We put a new lawn in because we have a new home about 3 years ago, and I know the landscaper even redid some areas because we had areas that just the water wouldn't drain into the ground at all, and it happens all summer long, too, if we get a lot of rain. And then my daughter was working in the flower garden right near the house, right near the area that's really a lot of flooding, and she took some
soil that she thought was clay, and she even made some beads with it because they hardened. So I'm assuming it is the clay, like you said. What do I do about those areas? Do I have to rototill it up and reseed it or put other soil in it or what?
Well, I guess it's there's two ways of addressing it. If it's in regards to the turf or the lawn, if there's a way to affect the drainage itself to get the water off those areas into another area or draining off your property.
Yeah, because it could be like a 5-foot stretch if that's just one area, and I'm assuming he just had a lot of topsoil that had clay in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, short of starting over and replacing that soil, you might want to consider a more aggressive approach with aeration, renting an aerator, or having someone come in and this equipment will take plugs of that lawn out, and then combing in or raking in some organic matter. Yeah.
Okay, our neighbor wants to aerate his lawn because he has a lot of thatch, and but his has been in about 10 years.
Right.
And but ours is only like 3 years, and a lot of rocky soil here in Heartland.
Right.
And how soon do you aerate, or when do you do that?
We'll usually wait until late May, early June to do the first round, and then we actually will go through and do it in September as well. And that seems to help a lot with our lawns were, to be honest, quite poor years and years ago. And we have variable soil at the gardens, but this aeration and a minimal fertilization program for us has worked wonders. Now, in regards to your flower beds, if you have clay in there, adding more organic matter will help.
That's what we've done, and it's helped.
Keep at it, because, you know, for us, we've had some areas.
We mulch it all the time.
Mm-hmm, and that'll help. It's a many-year process, though, to get to where you want.
You broke up some of the area, clunks of clay that you found in it, and that was only like a foot away from where this area is swamping.
Mm-hmm.
He redid some of the areas when I complained about it right afterward, but now it's been too long, I guess. I don't think he'll come back.
Well, aerating is something that, and especially if your neighbor's going to do it, usually
I'm going to see if I can share it.
Share the aerator with your neighbor, because typically it doesn't take that long to aerate a typical lawn.
Mm-hmm.
We
We've
aerate
got like 100 feet back to the railroad tracks.
Oh yeah, that's not going to take very long. Aerate the whole lawn and rake
even in. A new lawn would be good because it's rocky soil, and they had to bring a lot of topsoil in. We got a lot of rocks out of the garden too. And I don't know, I got a bunch of rocks to get rid of, and I don't know how to. And I'm wondering if even piling up rocks, like mulch around the big pine trees, and then maybe put a row of rock, couple rows of big rocks around the pine trees, will that help absorb some of the vibration from the train's noise and the sound? Or just putting in pines will do that?
Tough to say. Yeah, a living screen, you know, putting in a nice hedge or something, that'll help alleviate sound a lot better for sure.
You want to be a little careful putting rocks or a lot of heavy material close to the trees where you might have some problems. I don't know with pines, Mark, but you can do some damage, compact the ground, and do some damage to the roots. So you want to be a little careful about that.
Right, and rocks in general as a mulch tend to get weedy over time. And
yes,
you know, it might seem like a good place to put them, but you may regret that in later years.
Yeah. You know, we did it around the garden area just as a decorative thing, and I'm dealing with the weeds, so I'm considered taking it all out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Teresa.
And also, I wanted to know about transplanting the forsythia tree.
Forsythia should be blooming right now.
And I've got one that's about 5 foot that's partially under a big pine tree, and if we should remove it, should I cut down some of the branches to a lower level? Will it come back? And then next spring transplanted, and when's the best time, because I've got plants to transplant where they're going to put a new sidewalk in at our other house, and I need to know when I should transplant plants.
What I would do is wait until it's done blooming and all the petals have fallen off of it, which will be in the next probably 2 weeks. Cut it down to a foot and dig it right up and try to get a lot of soil around those roots. Dig
it
a decent.
It isn't too big to transplant, is it?
No, not at all. And forsythia, it won't be any the wiser once you move it and keep it well watered, and it'll send out new growth this year, and that growth will obviously bloom next spring. So do all of this in the next 4 weeks.
Okay, so I cut it down now to a foot and then transplant it how soon later?
Right away.
Right away.
Oh, right away. Okay.
Yeah, just wait till it's done blooming and have at it.
After blooming.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, because it blooms pretty early in the spring.
Yep, always does.
And then what about transplanting small plants? Do I have to wait till the temperature warms up to transplant?
Well, at this point, if you go out in the mornings and the ground is semi-frozen, I wouldn't bother. But as we get towards mid-April and early May, as plants emerge, that's the perfect time to move, you know, 90% of the plants.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like we've got some butterfly bushes and some other, a lot of other smaller plants that we got to move. They're going to put a new sidewalk in. So I didn't know if it's still freezing the ground, if it's too soon to do it.
Yeah, it's a little soon. Wait a couple weeks anyway, at least. Good luck. Thanks, Teresa. Jackie in Milwaukee. Your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. I have a different kind of a lily. I have two clumps of resurrection or magic lilies on the south side of my house, outside the back door, and they're at least 8 inches tall. I'm kind of concerned because this is the kind that goes back down into the ground, and then the flowers come up in the fall. And I put buckets, wooden buckets with holes in the bottom over them at night. But with the temperature during the day, I don't know if I'm if I'm going to be able to save them. They look pretty good yet. Should I put anything over them or not?
If you're willing to go through those measures, I would go for it, because you're referring, you know, this is a lycoris is the Latin name.
And,
and as you know, that foliage is bringing in all the energy for that bulb, which will bloom in August or early September. So that foliage, technically, you want to leave up all the way to the point when you're cutting your daffodil foliage down, which is in June. So you really want to protect that. But having said that, I'll say the narcissus, the daffodils, the lycoris foliage, a lot of that early foliage that's emerged is very frost tolerant. So I don't want to say don't do it, but if you're willing to go through the same measures you've been doing.
I am, because they grow these beautiful, on single stems, these beautiful flowers when the ground has been bare, and all of a sudden they come up, and I know that the green puts the food into the flowers. Well, if putting those things on and taking them off when the sun is shining and putting them back on at night, is that good enough?
That would be fine.
Not going to hurt anything.
Nope.
I'm going to do it. Thank you, dear.
All right. Thanks, Jackie. Tom in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a question about putting black plastic down on my garden. I have about a 20 by 70 foot area, and I've put some black plastic down to try to kill the weeds over the next several weeks, and I'm wondering how long I need to keep it on there. Do I need to do anything else? I have not rototilled it yet.
Well, the trick with the black plastic, the duration of time is really correlated with how hot it gets. You know, obviously with those, we need a couple more 70, 80 degree sunny days.
Yes.
Some people will leave black plastic on an area for almost a year, but in a case such as yours, I think if you leave it on until maybe mid-June and peel it up and maybe just peel up a portion of it and leave that exposed for, a week or two, and you'll know if you've taken care of the weeds.
Good. So I need to pray for hot weather.
You want hot weather.
Also, one quick question. Our lilacs are out about a half to three-quarters of an inch. I wonder if this cold weather is going to damage those.
It's tough to predict, you know, depending on where you live in the state. But lilacs are pretty resilient, and we all know if we miss the blooms this year, they'll be back next year.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thanks much.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Linda in Minocqua, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. I have some questions on mulching, in particular when to remove it. I am up in zone 3, and most of the plants that I mulch are just in case we don't get snow. But I've got some sub-zero roses, and I've got a wisteria that's a zone 3 wisteria, but still kind of fragile. When I look under the mulch, quite often it looks like it's developing almost a mold, and I'm fearful of leaving it on too long and fearful of taking it off too soon.
Well, good question. You know, depending on how the weather goes these next couple weeks, our approach with removing mulch around roses specifically is this is the time of year that we're taking a look at it. And if the mold is an issue, something you could do is rough that mulch up and peel it back and just observe if there's any sort of, you know, you mentioned this mold, but by roughing it up, you start to eliminate a lot of that that breakdown. And you could comb it back up around the rows if you're going to have another real cold spell. But in regards to that mulch, in these next couple weeks, you'll want to remove it, because if you're daytime temperatures are 55 or 60 and your nighttime is over 35 into the 40-degree range, you're fine to take that off.
Mm-hmm.
You should be okay, although, you know, you're further up north there, so you'll have to deal with your conditions.
Do you have snow on the ground up there?
Not very much. We didn't get hit like up in the snow belt.
Yeah, they really took a beating up further north, yeah.
Yeah, Ironwood, 20 inches, we got about 2.
Okay. In April. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And if you'd like to join us, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Mark Dwyer, our guest today of the Rotary Gardens of Janesville. Pleased to have him along. And Nan in La Crosse, you are next. Hi, Nan.
Good morning on this cold morning.
Yes.
I'm calling for a couple of reasons. I heard Mark in La Crosse recently at the public library, and he had mentioned that they have deer problems. And we often have deer problems around here in La Crosse, nibbling, where the deer just come right through the yard and nibble on whatever they choose to. And I have a friend who I'm helping to develop her edge of the woodland area, and we'd like to put some azaleas and rhododendrons around. Now, obviously, we can do the invisible fence and things like that during time frame that's not snow, et cetera. But in the winter, to protect the delicate limbs, et cetera, would it be possible to put that green burlap wrap around the bushes, just like I have seen people do with their arborvitae? Would that be a possibility to protect the shrubs enough so that the deer wouldn't bite on them?
That's a possibility. You know, if you're going to do any sort of wrapping like that, and we actually will do that around some of our tender plants to help screen winds, but something like that might be a deterrent for deer. Although, you know, the comment about burlap is, or the question is, if they're hungry enough, would they start eating that? You know,
mm-hmm.
Not sure on that one. But what we're finding is there's some success with putting, say, some sort of a hardware cloth or a ring, like a 4-foot diameter ring, 2 or 3 feet tall, around a plant such as that. And the intent is it's a small enough square footage on the interior that the deer are reticent to jump into it. And it's tall enough that it's awkward for them to just step over it. So hence they may be deterred by it. And I've heard many people mention that as a method. But I think the burlap may have some merit and may be a deterrent. But again, with deer, who has the answers? You know,
yeah.
It's crazy. And we had the worst damage ever at Rotary Gardens, and it's we're removing plants that have nothing left. So, yeah.
Oh, dear. Okay, the other question I have real quickly is I have some problems with daylilies and tiger lilies that have gotten a kind of a black spot on, and it's kind of spread to the delphiniums, et cetera, and I almost feel like pulling everything out. But what can I do to the soil to prevent that kind of stuff from spreading and kind of starting over?
Well, it's when you start to see, and I can't necessarily say exactly what that is, but when we have fungal issues, which is what that sounds like with our plants, mm-hmm. a lot of it can be traced back and minimized by a lot of cleanup efforts, getting that old foliage down early, raking the area clean. And I wouldn't recommend a soil drench or anything overly chemical at this point, and deal with it on a case-by-case basis. And once you start to see any sort of symptoms of a fungal matter on any plants, address those in particular with some sort of a fungicide. And then that fall cleanup, any of your perennials that have issues in the summer, cut them down after frost and remove all that foliage and remove that source of re-inoculation that happens every spring.
Okay.
So don't be daunted. It's not, you don't need to start over yet, but you just have to be very vigilant this year.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you much.
Yep, thanks much for calling. Mark Dwyer, our guest today, horticulturist and landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens of Janesville. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking outdoor plants today of all kinds with Mark Dwyer, horticulturist and landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens of Janesville. Thanks for listening in. If you have a question, give us a call at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Mark, I see you mentioned earlier the vegetable heirloom vegetable sale that you've got on May 19th, and there's a hosta sale, I believe, the following week, is there not?
That is correct. Actually, on May 26th, we have it'll be a small plant sale where we'll offer hostas. And what we're doing this spring, starting pretty soon here, is going through the entire gardens and dividing just about all our hostas. We have an extensive hosta collection, about 300 to 400 varieties. So we're going to go through, and this division is long overdue, and many of these hostas, it'll be an easy process. And I will say many aren't labeled. We don't know what they are.
No.
Due to loss of records, but regardless, we'll have it'll be a fun time. We'll have a couple thousand little hosta plants for sale, also from 8 to 4 on that weekend.
Now, when do you divide hostas in the spring? And they're pretty hardy plants, so not much of a problem to really divide them, is there?
Right. You know, hostas, you literally could divide at any point during the year. Obviously, hot summer division there's a concern there, and they get floppy and don't look good the rest of the year. But
right. We'll
target the time when the tips are very pointed and about 2 inches tall. They haven't started to unfurl. And normally that would be the first week in May, but now we're seeing things growing a lot more quickly. So in regards to hostas and so many of your other perennials, just as they emerge out of the ground, pick a nice overcast day, get a sharp spade, divvy them up. You can just take chunks right out of the soil and replace that soil, obviously, and relocate or pot these up. They're none the wiser. They have no idea what's going on. As you get into the hotter months, it's a little more of an ordeal.
Back to the phones and to Diane in Madison next. Diane, hi to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
We are considering putting in some rain barrels for ecological reasons.
Yeah.
But our friend and contractor who put our copper roof on this past year warned us that that may not be the best water to use for watering plants, et cetera. I'm wondering if you have any advice.
Copper.
Good question. I think, boy, I had never thought of that. Our master gardeners in Rock County, as a fundraiser, sell these rain barrels, which are, as you say, an ecologically sound way of recouping that water off your roof and using it in the garden. And I would have to defer to the roofer in this case, because copper tiling on the roof could affect, obviously, that water quality. So I'd have to give a big I don't know on that, but I think the concern is valid for sure, and I would do a little more research on it.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. You might, Diane, you might just contact the, you're in Madison, contact the Dane County Extension horticulturist, Lisa Johnson, and she may not know right off the top of her head, but she would certainly be able to find the information out for you.
Thank you again.
Yeah, I just call Lisa. She'll be able to find the proper information on that. But there is some cause for concern, or at least, you know, check it out first. Allison in Greendale, hi to you.
Hi. I sure hope you can help me out. I'm from New England, and I grew up just loving the voluptuous hydrangeas that we had on Cape Cod. I cannot get a hydrangea bush to bloom. It's a beautiful bush. It looks gorgeous, but we've had one bloom in 3 years, and I've tried, I think, everything, but I can't get a bloom on it. Any suggestions?
Well, that's odd. I know with your former climate, you had a little more flexibility with
right.
the types of hydrangeas and the color ranges. But in our Wisconsin climate, there's many species and obviously varieties that we can grow. So the fact that they haven't bloomed, in my mind, is a big concern, because the majority of our hydrangeas will that are hardy in Wisconsin will bloom on new wood. So if there was a concern about critters eating it, or if you had to cut it back for some reason, the majority will bloom that following year. By chance, do you know what species of hydrangea you have?
Oh, gosh, I should. No, I don't. I know it's a big, broad, green leaf.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the south side of the house. It's in a berm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the soil may not be deep enough? Everything else, the bee balm, everything else there grows beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot get a hydrangea to bloom. Should we just take it out and start over again?
Well, that's a possibility. You know, if you have a full sun location, target the hydrangea paniculatas, the panicled hydrangeas.
Okay.
And there's a lot of great varieties out there, Tardiva and Unique, and it goes on and on.
Okay.
And those are reliable summer bloomers. And hydrangeas like damp, well-drained, rich soil. Mm-hmm. So that might be a consideration. But, you know, even if they were struggling, they try to, you know, poof out a couple blooms.
I know. We got one.
Mm.
It's now dried, hanging in my dining room.
Mm-hmm.
So. It might be time to try a different plant, different hydrangea.
Now, we cut it back every year. Is that hurting it?
No, you know, again, with like Annabelle hydrangeas, which many of us know, the big puff balls.
Right, right.
We cut those down to the ground every year.
That's what we do, too.
Okay, and they come up 3 to 4 feet and they bloom.
Right.
The panicled hydrangeas I just mentioned also will bloom on new wood, although they're a little more sensitive to severe pruning. But I don't have a good explanation for you besides perhaps a soil or moisture condition.
Okay, is there any place, and can you take like your soil in to be tested? Can they let
yes.
you know if it's acidic enough or...
Yeah, the university, well, there are private soil testing labs located in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And there's a soil and plant analysis laboratory in Madison. And if you go to your county extension office or even go online to the UW Extension, you can get some information on how to take the sample and where to send it. And you can send it into the UW. And frankly, now, I mean, I'd send it pretty quickly, actually, because... probably get pretty fast results.
Right, right. Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
We have a weeping mulberry outside of our home. Can we just trim that at the joints?
When you say trim at the joints, what exactly do you mean?
When you know the tree is weeping down
mm-hmm.
and it's getting pretty long, can we just cut it back? It seems like there are different joints in the branches.
Sure, absolutely. And the weeping mulberries, I think many times the larger specimens you can see problems where they should have been pruned a long time ago.
This is a miniature.
Well, that's perfect timing to start addressing that, and you certainly can. And if you're going to prune it near a bud, keep an eye on which way that bud faces, because if you're going to snip just beneath that bud to raise it up a bit, pick one that has a bud facing outward from the plant.
Okay.
Otherwise, you'll have, if it's an inward-facing bud, you'll have a new interior growth, which you'll want to avoid.
Okay, that's good advice. Thank you very much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And Wendy in Black River Falls, we go to you now. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Okay, I have a question. I've had trouble for years now with my dog's urine. It's a small area, like 20 feet by 30 feet. And we've reseeded and done everything, but he has allergies really bad, so we, you know, give him shots, the whole thing, special food. But this mold keeps growing up in the ground. I mean, it's just green, it's smelly, it's awful. And I've called the extension office before, and they've talked about lime. Now, I don't know. I've tried that, and that hasn't helped anything. Do you know of anything that could help that would not be toxic?
Boy.
Did I flum you? Are you there?
Yeah, the silence speaks volumes, I think so. Good
I'm
question.
Sorry.
No, that's a valid question. Obviously, toxicity would be a concern for your animal.
Right.
But in regards to that mold, maybe having that identified would be the start, because perhaps there could be a specific product that would target that type of issue.
Okay.
And... Is the growth of the lawn another factor? Because obviously, you know, the repeated...
Right, it's not growing.
Mm-hmm, and it,
I mean, yeah. You know, every year we've tried to reseed it, and we've just given up the last couple of years.
Well, it's probably a shady area that has...
It's only shady in the morning, otherwise it's like blaring sun.
Oh.
So I don't know what to do, you know.
Well, a good first step, I think, would be... I think Mark's exactly right. You
test
need
it.
To get find out... what that mold is.
Okay.
And you can, one way to do it would be to take it into your county extension office. They might send a sample to the plant pathology diagnostic center here in Madison at UW-Madison and get it identified for you, because that's probably the only way you're going to be able to effectively deal with it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
It's
yeah.
Not been fun, but
no.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, sometimes it's just an environmental condition that, yeah, you know, tough to deal with sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy in Madison, hi to you.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about black plastic. A neighbor had offered me some lily of the valley because their patch was running rampant, and I was starting to dig it last fall, and I found that it was growing through and along a layer of black plastic that was buried about 3 to 4 inches deep. And I think that somebody must have put black plastic down and just left it. I think that that's a bad thing, but I don't know. What happens if you leave black plastic down? It's in a large area around some trees.
The concern with black plastic, and I personally never recommend it for landscaping application, simply because if there's no holes or the integrity of that substance hasn't been affected, black plastic is impervious. So as water infiltrates down through the soil, or if you've amended the soil up top, all of that benefit never gets below the black plastic. So there's an issue of moisture retention with your soil. The fact that the lily of the valley, which can be a garden thug, which I think you know, is getting through it, means that the integrity is broken. There's holes and rips in it, and eventually that will deteriorate.
And we can talk some more about that. We need to take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be right back with our guest, Mark Dwyer. Stay with us. We're talking outdoor flowers, trees, and shrubs today with our guest, Mark Dwyer, horticulturist and landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens of Janesville. Larry Mueller here. So pleased to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question. And, Mark, we had Kathy from Madison online who had kind of discovered that somebody had put some black plastic down, and then it got covered, apparently, by 4 or 5 inches or 6 inches maybe of soil.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying that it's not the best of things to have there because the water can't get through.
Right. The only merit in that situation is I've heard it used for underneath, say, ligule areas or certain plants that like it a little damper. So if you have a well-drained soil that tends to dry out, you might bury some plastic to help retain moisture underneath that plant. But black plastic in the landscape, you know, first of all, what is that made out of? And if it's buried in the ground, it takes forever to break down. And what will that do to your soil? But again, as a underlayment for mulch or something, it's not warranted because, again, it keeps water from percolating down, and it also keeps organic amendments or treatments on top from getting down there. So I've never heard somebody say, you know, I'm so glad I put that black plastic in my landscape 10 years ago. So for Kathy, you know, it's a matter of trying to get that out of there, or dig as you plant things, dig through it in a piecemeal manner, and eventually, you know, you will have that infiltration of water, but you've inherited a liability for your garden.
Yeah. And again, thanks, Kathy, for calling. Ruth in Janesville, it's your turn now. Hi, Ruth. Ruth, are you with us? Let's see here. Let's go to Steve in Eau Claire. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I need some help in selecting some shrubs and decorative grasses. I've got an area about 4 feet wide and 70 feet long in my lawn, and I want to plant something there that'll kind of give you a visual divide for the lawn space and something that will be low maintenance and have winter color. For the shrubs, I was thinking about some sort of a dogwood with red twigs on it, but what other good options might I have?
Well, what would be too tall for you in terms of grasses in that divider there?
More than 5 feet tall might be a little tall.
Okay. Well, I'll mention the dogwoods first. You alluded to the red twig dogwoods, which are great. There's a lot of different varieties. Don't target a green leaf one because it's not much interest in the summer. Target a variegated one. There's a nice one called Ivory Halo, which has Ivory Halo, yes. That's white variegated. And there's one called Hedge Rose Gold, which is a red twig dogwood with very golden variegated leaves. And beautiful winter interest. But targeting grasses, I'd recommend going with what are called feather reed grasses or Calamagrostis. That's with a C. Calamagrostis, there's three wonderful varieties. And they're very upright, very rigid through the winter. They all get about 4 feet tall. Target Carl Forrester, which is a green-leafed one. And these grasses are cool season, which means they'll get their height very quickly in spring, meaning they'll be 3 to 4 feet by the end of June. Again, Carl Forrester. There's a variegated one called Overdam, that has a white variegation. And there's a neat new one called El Dorado, which is a yellow variegated. And the leaves tend to be in the lower portion of the plant. But again, that interest is there. And they're very upright and very architectural. And we cut ours down in March because as a cool season grass, they'll grow very early in the season. And ours are already about a foot tall out of the ground.
Hmm.
Are all those varieties are feather reed grasses?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And would my local garden center likely have some of those?
I think you'll find Carl Forrester for sure. And if you can't find Overdam, look for one called Avalanche, which is another variegated one. El Dorado, the last one I mentioned, is very is new, so that might be a little more difficult. But put them in clumps, like groups of three or five, and stagger them. Put them about 2.5 or even 3 feet apart, and they're wonderful. In 4 to 5 years, you'll have to divide them, but that's easy to do. It's an easy grass to divide and relocate.
Perfect. Sounds right. Like a great idea. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Steve. And Jerry in East Troy, hello to you.
Hi. I want to know about hydrangea vines. I've planted some about 9 years ago, and it grows up on a wooden wall. And I haven't had one bloom on it at all, even though I have the Annabelle hydrangeas growing right near them. So I was wondering, should I prune them, cut them back, add something to the soil?
Well, I wish I had more information for you. Really, the answer is just patience, because those are extremely slow growing. And we have some that are, we've trained up an archway, which has been about a 12-year process, and they bloom wonderfully. But as a new plant, 3, 4, 5 years, you may not see blooms. So patience is really an issue. And if your other hydrangeas are doing fine, that'll catch up. That'll eventually bloom.
What you think within another year or so I'll have to wait? I mean, it's been 9 years already, so.
Well, if give it another year, and if that doesn't work, give me a call at Rotary Gardens, and we'll figure something out. But, 10 years is pushing it, so there might be a concern with a soil issue. What you may want to do is just sprinkle a little slow-release sulfur around the base of that hydrangea.
Okay.
They do prefer slightly acidic soil, and that might help improve that a little bit, that condition.
Okay, I'll try it.
All right, thanks, Jerry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ron in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Want to know about lilies of the valley. Try to keep it right along the building, but it wants to spread. How do you keep it from spreading? And how does it spread, first of all? By seeds or underground?
It spreads primarily by underground rhizotomous roots.
Okay, so how I got to put some kind of underground wall to keep it from spreading?
Exactly. You need some sort of edging or a separation that is contiguous. There's no gap whatsoever that this thing can get through.
And but, how deep?
Well, that's the thing. You have to go with Lily of the Valley, you have to go at least 6 inches deep.
Yeah.
And you also need to have about an inch above grade, because something like that not only will try to go under, there's a possibility it'll hop over edging that, you know, your edging shouldn't be flush with ground level, or it'll hop it.
Yeah, I'm in a small Milwaukee lot, and pretty soon my neighbor will have benefit of these things. Not that I don't, I'm sure he doesn't care. He'd rather have lawn, but when I try to go cut the lawn behind that, beyond that, I'm going on his property in order to get over there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean, I've cut them off, but that doesn't stop them.
No, maybe sink a couple 1x10s and leave an inch above ground, and you'll have that separation. But they're beautiful when they bloom, but boy, there's not much else out there that are as vigorous.
Yeah, Creeping Charlie.
Yeah, true.
That's the other one.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. Stephen Eau Claire, hello to you.
Hello to you. I have a question. I have some Japanese lilacs that are up against the house, and they're standing over 6 feet tall, 8 feet tall now, and I'd like to move them. I wonder how hard that is to get them to take in a new location. I'd like to move them to the border of the property.
Well, that's a good question. In terms of digging, obviously with any sort of woody plant material, there's a timing issue, and something like that, you're going to want to wait now at this point. And target perhaps a late September move,
okay,
or a very early spring move, like late March. So I think your window is passed.
Okay.
I mean, you could move it now, but you may affect the blooms.
Mm-hmm.
It may have some stress and struggle a little bit, but obviously, with your moving, you want to get a good mass of soil around those roots. And I've mentioned moving on an overcast day and water the heck out of it when it gets reestablished. But lilacs are really tough. So, I mean, not tough to move. They're very durable. So I don't think you'll have an issue of it taking. It's just getting your timing down.
Well, thanks for your help on that. I thought maybe I was early enough, but it looks like we're going to wait another season.
That might be best.
Well, and Eau Claire, it's a little further north, but...
Yeah, you know, if you're not seeing any budding at this point, or the buds have probably swollen, I don't think you'll see any leaves at this point, but you could take that risk. And again, if you're willing to perhaps sacrifice flowers, go for it.
All right, well, thanks for your help. And then I have a suggestion for the caller from that had a mother in Michigan. I used to live there, mm-hmm. and with the mole problem.
Yeah.
That if he digs into the soil, not too deep, 6 inches probably enough, he'll find about an inch and a half long grub, sometimes 3/4 inch, sort of a fat grub. If that's there, then that's the problem. If you get rid of that, you'll get rid of the moles. I think you need a chemical treatment, and I don't know what to suggest. I would say go to the garden supply store for that answer.
Yeah, sometimes there are grubs that can create a problem. Sometimes the moles are there even when there aren't grubs. It's a kind of an issue. You'd want to know that, in fact, you had that sort of an issue. But thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Bruce in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Well, that's a great program. I really enjoy listening. I have a question about seems to have arrived in Wisconsin in the last 5 years. It's growing in the very back of my yard. And I've been trying to kill it with black plastic. I saw this weed when I lived in Ohio, and they called it teasel. And it's a very nasty plant. It's not a thistle. It has a very hardy stalk, and these leaves are grouped to create little leaf fronds to collect the water, and it's got spikes on it, and it's really hard to get rid of. And it seems like it's new to this area, and I don't know what to do with it. We could never get rid of it where I grew up. Are you familiar with this at all? Or?
Yes, teasel is, and I don't quote me on this, but I think it's, I believe it's from Europe, but it's a very vigorous weed that spreads primarily by seed, and it sounds like what you're doing with your plastic is correct. We've seen some of it at the gardens, and it's a very popular dried flower used in dried arrangements, and you can identify it after it's done blooming. It has this sort of a four elongated petal structures that connect above the flower head, and mm-hmm. yours probably get 3 to 4 feet or so.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. And it's the catching that seeding in late summer. So if you have it, you can try to deadhead it, or even if you got out there in midsummer with a weed whip and tried to target cutting it down so it doesn't bloom, that would help a lot. But it produces thousands of seeds. So the real question is how many seeds are laying dormant in your soil. So this won't be as bad as, say, garlic mustard, which is very prolific in our state and through much of the country. But teasel is a weed of concern for sure. And I think black plastic is an approach or an early herbicide application. And repeatedly for many years will probably be the approach.
Oh, wow. For many years, okay.
Yeah.
If you were never able to get rid of it in Ohio, in the back pasture part of the property that I lived on.
Mm-hmm.
Is it new to Wisconsin? Is it a global warming get?
I don't think so. I think it's hardy. The thing with teasel out in pastures and such, I don't think any wildlife will eat it, so it consistently blooms. And mm-hmm. the seed, I think, is just working its way around. And ornamentally, I could order teasel seeds today if I wanted to. So it's
really?
It's being sold as an ornamental and for the cut and dried flower industry. So it's working its way around.
So it's really not a weed. It's a hybrid.
Well, a weed is a plant where that exists where you don't want it.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. like lilies of the valley. All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce. All right, Debbie in Johnston Center. It's your turn. Hi, Deb.
I have a Japanese lilac tree that we planted about 4 years ago. It gets sun most of the day, maybe about 6 hours or so. And the first year that it was in the ground, we had nice flowers on it. But every year since, it has not flowered. And it leaves out very nicely. The leaves look very healthy. And then, I don't know, maybe halfway through the season, they seem to curl a bit and get a little raggy on the edges. And I can't find any bug infestation, but I just can't figure out what's happening to it. And it doesn't look, the bark doesn't look like it's affected by anything, or it doesn't look sick other than the leaves get a little strange.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the bloom time on Japanese tree lilacs is 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks after our French lilacs. So I think the symptoms you're seeing are something that wouldn't necessarily affect the blooms. But I will say the Japanese tree lilacs, many of those bloom in intermittent years, every other year. A reliable bloomer, a tree lilac every year is a Peking lilac. There's a nice one called China Snow. But, you know, back to your condition, when you start to see symptoms of the leaves like that, cut a little sample and run it to the extension agency and see what's going on. There might be some sort of stress that's induced through the summer that affects the next year's spring blooms. But I wouldn't give up on it yet, but do understand that in many cases it's an intermittent year thing with the blooms.
It's an ivory silk. Is that an intermittent?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So, while I might not see it every year, it should have happened before now. So.
Yes, it sounds like it.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Deb. And Chris in Shorewood, hi to you.
Hello. I hope you can solve my problem. My husband planted a beautiful maple tree in our front yard about 38 years ago. It's been blooming beautiful leaves, and people stop and stare for years. This 2 years ago, my husband died. 6 weeks later, my dog died. And now, a year ago, this tree he planted is starting to die, I think. The leaves on the lower branches just really never fully developed and have a brown crinkle, like somebody took a singe and singed them. And I looked at the tree just this morning, and it does not seem to be budding the way it should, and there are little broken branches. What can I do for it?
Do you know what type of maple it is offhand?
Golden yellow, sugar maple, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like some of the symptoms, it could be a soil issue. You know, we've had some maples at the gardens that have gotten verticillium wilt, which is a condition that shows a lot of browning and crisping of leaves. And the progression with that issue is that the tree dies very relatively quickly. But that's something that's a soil-borne sort of condition.
What would happen, it's not, you know, all of these years, it's always been beautiful, full leaves.
Is it perhaps on a parkway that you get a lot of salt?
Yes, it's across from the Downer Woods, and there was a lot of construction there, and there were deep tunnels in the street and lots of, you know, smoke and trucks and dust that came over when they were tarring the roads that shouldn't be into the woods. But other than that...
Mm-hmm. And is your street salted? Is there a lot of snow with salt that's pushed up on your parkway?
Yeah, but only I don't have my yard chemically treated at all.
Mm-hmm.
My neighbor does, but I do not, and I have lots of scylla that's all over.
Right. You know, the comment on sugar maples, you know, is an open, it's a Wisconsin native, and they thrive in the damp woodlands as an urban tree. They're not urban tolerant at all. So instances of road salt or compaction or depleted soils, that may be collectively affecting that tree. And you're at the point now where I think when you start to see any sort of symptoms, as you are now, get a reputable arborist, a certified arborist, to come take a look at it. And you could have soil samples taken as well. And try to nail this down as soon as possible, because if it's a reversible condition, you'll want to know as soon as possible before you have more decline.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have done it last fall when
I wouldn't waste any time. Get a hold of a certified arborist.
Yeah.
Someone who really knows, who has the training to be able to help out.
Well, that's what I'll and the other is also a hydrangea. I had a beautiful blue one 4 years ago, and it was a house plant. I put it out, and it rebloomed this last year. I cut it back not about 3 inches, and I covered it over this winter. It's out in front of the house planted. Should that be starting to revitalize now, or Is there anything I can do to help that not die?
At this point, you may not see any growth on it, so I would just wait and see where it starts to bud out. The warning on some of the florist hydrangeas are they may be hardy in terms of root hardiness. And I have four or five of those in my backyard. But when you talk about it had a blue color, you know, a couple years ago, if it does grow and bloom, just be warned that that blue is a condition of pH. It's an acid. It was grown in acid potting soil. So if it does bloom, you may see pink or almost white. But those tend to bloom on old wood. So if you've cut it back or if it dies back to a certain point, you may not see blooms. So
should I cut it back some more now?
I think at this point, wait and see where it buds out and cut back any of that dead growth down to the first set of live buds and see what happens at that point. So observation at this point, I think, is warranted. Just keep an eye on it and deal with it accordingly.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Christy in Potosi, it's your turn. Hi, Christy.
Good morning. I have a question, two questions. One is I have a flower bed that's been invaded by periwinkle that crossed a rock path. Mostly I have lilies in the bed, and I was thinking I would have to dig it all up and get rid of the periwinkle, but do you think those two are compatible? Can I leave it?
Absolutely. You know,
oh,
great. The lilies will come right up through the vinca, and the concern with that, the periwinkle, is as a ground cover, it's extremely vigorous, and it's somewhat resistant to herbicides.
Yeah,
so,
I'm learning that it's very vigorous.
yeah. So containment's important because that will take over woodlands. I mean, it will just keep going.
Ah.
And it has a beautiful blue blooms in spring. But with lilies, that's just an underlying plant. Now, periwinkle thrives in shadier locations.
And it's getting shadier and shadier every year.
Okay. Well, and in that case, your lilies, you know, if your lilies start to really stretch out and the blooms suffer at all, relocation, I would do that.
Right.
But for now, let them hang out.
Okay, excellent. The other thing, I used to, in the fall, steal red branches from a shrub that was growing at an abandoned house, but now it's been bulldozed. It was about waist high, and the thing I liked about it was that the branches were not stiff and pokey. They were nice and drapey, and they had real pretty red leaves on them. I have a place I'd like to put it that's sunny in the morning but shady later. Do you have any suggestion? I mean, I don't know if I could find this same one, but something that, you know, it got red in the fall and was so pretty and it wasn't stiff.
Hmm. You know, to be honest, based on your description, I'm not sure what it is, and I would have to know what it is to tell you where to put it. That's something if you ever find it again or see it, send me a digital picture at the gardens and I can identify it. But
do you have a suggestion for something that would color up in the fall and wouldn't be real big?
In terms of stem color?
It was the leaves.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's lots of things that are planted based on their fall color. You know, the list goes on and on. You know, the fall color is dependent on a lot of different conditions as well. But in terms of that type of stem, you know, people plant burning bushes. There's, you know, so many things that have great fall color.
Burning bushes are nice.
Burning bushes, yeah, they're pretty nice. But, you know, I think going to your local garden center and saying, hey, I'm targeting fall and seeing what's available. Because I could sit here for an hour and just rattle off the fall color. So just do a little sniffing around, I think.
And with that, we'll conclude for today. Mark Dwyer, our guest, horticulturist and landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens of Janesville. Lots of things going on there. Go to their website at rotarygardens.org and find out about all the sales and all the things that are going on there. And Mark, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very, very much. And thank you all for listening and stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.